This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QUEERFAM for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
This episode is brought to you by Ember. We're happy to have them on board, making the show a possibility and keeping Robin cooler.
Thank you, Ember.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
We sure are. Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride, if these ovaries could talk, you would say. How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just because we
stay. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk.
Oh, my God.
They are talking.
They are talking. Other people are talking about us, Jamie. I don't know if you noticed, but Amy Schumer tweeted about a book. What'd she say, Jamie? What'd she say?
I guess that's what happens when you write a book. Let's see. She wrote, "I fucking love this book."
Amy Schumer said that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's funny, it's heartwarming, it's endearing, and it's eye-opening in terms of what LGBTQ folks go through to make a family. But it's also really relevant to people like me who've gone through the fertility process at a doctor's office.
Shut up, Jamie!
Amy fucking Schumer.
She said that about her book.
About us. She tweeted it. She tweeted it,
and she even put on the IG stories, "I love this book." Come on.
She did. So thank you, Amy Schumer.
Thank you, Amy Schumer.
We really appreciate that.
And
so the
thank
book is
you
out.
To everyone who bought it. Like, we had at one point, like, some, like, little bestseller tag on Amazon or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it meant, but
I don't know either. We really have no idea what any of this means.
We
but
were texting each other back and forth, like, is that good?
We have no idea.
Is that good?
We don't know.
We don't.
No, but it seems like it's going well because a lot of you are sending us pictures of the book that just arrived in the mail. And we love that. Send your pictures to us.
Keep sending pictures and videos of you reading the book and put them up in the social and tag us. Come on now.
Yes, please. Because we want to see. We want it. Like, it's cool that people are buying it, but we also want people to read it. Put it in your bathroom.
You can get it at all major retailers. And also, if you want to buy local, check IndieBound. So that's a great resource for buying local.
Yeah. And, you know, go to any bookstore and ask them to carry it.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah.
And that's a thing. Apparently, that's a thing. I've just learned that. I've been going into as many bookstores as possible and asking them to carry our book.
Have you really?
I have. I mean, I've only gotten to two so far, but it's
that's as many
really
as you could. That's as many
no
as you
joke.
Could.
It feels awkward because, and then the one guy was like, did you write this? I was like, yeah.
Did you look
no,
like...
No, he was really cool. He was like, well, congratulations. That's great.
Oh, you know, my God. So... That's so cute. He was like, did you write this? That's hilarious. Because your picture was on the book.
I think they're used to authors coming in and saying,
probably.
Can you please carry my book? You know, not like Margaret Atwood, but...
I mean, she doesn't need to do that.
No.
Oh, well, we have one serious thing that we need to say.
Yeah.
We got some feedback from Amy Stewart 578 on the Ye Olde Instagram, and we wanted to share it.
Yeah. So we have been a little disparaging towards doctors. So she's and in the past. And so we want to address it. So she said, my wife and I are both physicians, and there is a lot of physician bashing that happens that I don't necessarily appreciate. And what I'm specifically talking about is seeing things like the doctor was probably on the golf course or getting a lunch break, etc. So we have said in the past some flippant things about doctors. And oh, my goodness, we mean in no way to offend anyone. And
yeah,
we really do think the world of doctors.
Oh, my God. We love our doctors.
And so we just want to apologize for saying anything that could be taken the wrong way. We feel so bad. So
yeah. And we know specifically the OB doctors work tirelessly. I think sometimes we err on the side of the joke. And so we should do that less in this case. So
yeah,
thank you for the feedback, though. Thank you for the feedback.
Yes, we love feedback, and we're going to do better.
I mean, we like feedback that's really positive too, though, guys. So if you want to you want to give us more of that,
well,
that's nice.
She also gave us a lot of positive feedback.
She did. She did
too.
Thank you, Amy Stewart. 578.
Yes, thank you. 578. But we love doctors. We really do. So thanks.
We do. And we had one more thing. It's the top of October, and Jamie and I, as a general rule, don't get too political because, you know, who wants to hear politics from us idiots? But we do want to remind everybody to register to vote. I mean, it is. I mean, with RBG dying, all I can think of is the rights of women and over their body. And I just think it is more important than ever to vote. We're a divided country, and we need a unifier to bring us out of this.
Yeah. Everybody make sure you're registered and don't forget to vote.
Yeah. And in New York State, I think this is the first year for the presidential election that we can vote early. I believe it's October 24th. Through the 1st of November, you'll be able to vote early and in person, which, I mean, I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm saying that personally, all the talk, Trump's talk about ballots and his talk about fighting against the ballots has made me really, if you can be safe, you know, I have to say that up front, I want to vote in person because I want to make sure my vote is counted. I'm very, very worried about all that. So just take precautions that you need, but just vote.
Yeah, do some research on your state and what's going on and figure out what you need to do to make sure your vote counts, I think
yes.
is our point here. And anyway, we should also thank a new special person, our newest Patreon member. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Can we do it, Jamie? Can we say her name?
Alexa. That's an easy one.
Alexa.
Thank you, Alexa Rendini. I think that's right.
I think Rendini is right. I mean, because what's the option? Rendini? That's not right.
That doesn't sound right. Alexa Rendini.
Is it got like a Rendini?
Rendini.
Is it
Rendini?
Like Rendini?
Rendini. Alexa Rendini.
All right,
Alexa Rendini. Ooh, that sounds pretty.
It's so pretty. Well, we
Alexa
thank you,
Rendini.
Alexa. We thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, my Alexa is probably going off right now. Oh, my God. Does that happen to you, Alexa? Do you have an Alexa? And does it get very confusing? Can you please let us know?
Alexa. Yeah, we need to
know. I bet she has a Google Home instead.
I hope she does, because that would piss me off all the time.
All day long. It'd be like, shut up, Alexa. Not you.
Can you change Alexa's name?
No, you can't. I tried to.
Oh.
Yeah, no, they're turds.
Anyway, we keep getting sidetracked.
Okay,
if you would like to join our Patreon community where you're going to get all kinds of bonus content and you're literally helping us cover operating expenses and keep this podcast going, you're going to get videos, swag for joining. You know, just head to patreon.com/ovariestalk and it helps us out. And it helps you out too because you get more goodness of the ovaries.
Yes, including more goodness of the ovaries, including like unedited videos for a lot of the interviews.
Yeah.
Let's get to our guest today, Jamie.
Okay, this one's fun.
Yes.
She's a straight ally. We have another straight ally, but the subject matter was something we couldn't pass up. So Lisa Sellin Davis is an essayist. She's a novelist and a journalist, and she wrote an article for the New York Times called "Like Tomboys and Hate Girly Girls." That's sexist.
There's no in the title, though.
There's no
So the article was about her daughter, and it went viral. And then it prompted her to write a book about tomboyism, if you will. And the book's fantastic. And we want to talk to her because, you know, so many of our LGBTQ folks, including myself, were tomboys growing up. And we were like, let's talk about that.
Right. And tomboy is apparently a not completely accepted term anymore. So it was really interesting. So
it's fading out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very interesting conversation about gender that we think you guys are all going to enjoy.
Let's bring her in.
Please, please. Helen, bring her in.
Helen, get Lisa on the Zoom.
Helen.
Oh, Helen. She's not going to do it. I'll get her.
No, Helen.
Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Welcome to our ovaries.
Thank you. How are your ovaries today?
Well, a little stressed.
They're tired. They're tired.
They almost cried earlier because my kids were driving me crazy. To be quite honest.
Can ovaries weep? Can ovaries weep?
I think mine weep daily. I don't know. It's really. Now we're getting into weird territory. Let's talk about Lisa.
Well, as we always mentioned, like, Lisa's the author of the book Tomboy, The Surprising History and Future of Girls Who Dare to Be Different. And we are so excited you are with us today.
Because I think we have a lot of girls who dare to be different who listen to our podcast.
That's true.
Yes, I would imagine that, you know, loving other women puts you in that category automatically, even though how different are you really for
really
that?
Really? That's the truth. That's the truth.
We like to say we're all just yelling at our kids just like you. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Same, but different, but same.
Yeah.
Well, before Jamie and I get weirder, let's start where we always start, which is with our elevator pitch. Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay. No pressure, Lisa. No pressure. We're not going to cut you off. I won't let Robin do that to you.
All right. On your mark.
All right.
Get set. Go.
Okay. Well, my family consists of a smart, funny fella I'm married to, and my two daughters who are polar opposites in many ways. And it's funny because my family was made quite traditionally with a couple of humps, but my nephew is adopted, and then my sister and her wife each had one kid with the same sperm and then did the second party adoption. So I have the most vanilla version of family in my family.
Amazing. Perfect. We won't hold the vanilla against you.
And by the way, you get an extra 10 seconds because you worked in a couple of humps into your elevator pitch. I love that.
A couple of humps, literally just a couple of humps.
A couple of humps. And, you know, but my children are the same sex, but are very different in terms of certain aspects of gender. So that's where my family is interested.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that. Because I believe your kids were part of the impetus to write your book. So will you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So when my older daughter was in preschool, when the kids were starting to really divide by sex and girls were starting to play with girls and boys were starting to play with boys, which I knew nothing about at the time, she was really in the middle and she was playing with both sets of kids and she would play princess, but she would want to be the dog. And once we were giving her a choice of what she wanted to wear, you know, she wanted to wear more of the boys' clothes. We had, of course, both clothes. I would like to put air quotes around boys' and girls' clothes. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of this journey. And then when she was in first grade, someone told her she was a tomboy. So she came home and said, oh, do you know that I'm a tomboy? That's a girl who has short hair and like sweatpants. And that's when I realized that.
Or that's someone in COVID-19 quarantine.
That's right. That was pre-COVID. Anyway, that's when I realized that all the girls had short hair and sweatpants when I was a kid, and that the word tomboy was super common when I was a kid. And I wondered where the word went and also where that kind of person went. And then a few years later, I wrote about something for Parenting Magazine about that at the time that nobody looked at.
Welcome to our world.
Seriously.
Then a few years later, I wrote an op-ed about how grown-ups who knew my child well were almost like obsessively asking her if she wanted to be a boy. And while I knew that what came out of going to gender trainings and wanting to be inclusive and supportive, and I'm all for that, I also felt like after a certain point, you're communicating that if you like this quote unquote boy stuff, which we all know is a construction, you know, then you're saying you must not be okay in the girl category. And so I wrote about that tension, thinking that I was doing it in a really careful, inclusive way. And it inspired a huge reaction. Let's just call it a reaction. Positive and negative. More positive than negative. And and then all those things together turned into a book. Okay, what happened? If that's offensive, what happened? If tomboys were a thing when I was little and they're not now, what happened? And that's really the question I went in with. Just what happened?
Robin, are you sweating again while we're recording?
Yes, it is so hot in here. I have to shut the AC off to record.
I know, but why aren't you wearing your Ember?
Oh my God, why am I not wearing my Ember?
I don't know.
Oh my God, I can't believe what an idiot I am.
I have to say, every week, I have to hear this. I'm so sweaty.
I know. Because the Ember is like this cute bracelet, and it's so helpful because everybody, like, temperature is so personal, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not sweating. I'm sweating.
No, I'm not sweating.
And most of the public places are heated or cooled, and they aim for a temperature that's like 80% of the population, and the rest of us are SOL.
Yeah, well, you can't handle any of the
temperatures. No, I can't. I'm sweating.
Well, listen, Robin, I'm here to tell you, Ember Wave is here when you need relief the most.
Like right now.
I know. All you have to do is put it on and press the little button to activate the Ember Wave, and you're going to get it. You can create a cool or a warm sensation on your wrist. You need the cool one right now.
I know. I also, by the way, use it at the playground when it starts to get cool and fall and dippy. But anyway, my point is that the sensation, it works with your body and your mind to make you feel more comfortable. And it works in a matter of minutes because it's based on the science of how your mind and your body respond to temperature sensations. That's tough to say.
That's hard to say. Yeah.
Temperature
sensations.
So
for all of our listeners out there, Ember Wave provides comfort in unpredictable climates, like we just said. It provides relief from stress, which Robin needs.
Oh my God.
And support for sleep. It has a fall asleep mode that can help you maintain a comfortable temperature as you drift off to sleep, which I think Robin needs as well.
I need all of that. And listen, Jamie, here's some places you can wear the Ember bracelet. The
right
Ember
where Wave, you are right now. That's one place.
When you're about to record a podcast and you're sweating, number one. Number two, in an over air conditioned office.
So true.
Restaurants, always freezing. Mm-hmm. Airplanes, always freezing. Never sweating, always freezing. After a workout, get all hot. Bring it down, malls, in the car, crowded public places. I mean, there's almost nowhere. I'm the only idiot who's not wearing her Ember right now when I should be wearing it.
You really should be wearing it.
I don't understand it.
Next time we record, if you don't have it on, we're going to stop.
No, I will have it on.
But listen, guys, right now, Ember Wave is offering our listeners $50 off when you go to emberwave.com/OCT. And that's spelled EmberWave.com/OCT.
Jamie, we have to stop recording because I have to go get it right now.
Okay. Oh my God. Please go get it.
I'm sweating.
Go get it. I have learned so much just from reading your book. You're very smart, Lisa. You really research things.
I looked
you'll
up
see,
a lot of
you'll
stuff.
You'll see we're not that.
You did. That you're really good at that. But just about the history of the word tomboy and the history of femininity and masculinity, like through hundreds of years. But what do you think? I want to know, before we get into that, what do you think caused the negative comments that you experienced? Like, where did that come from, the volatility?
Well, one thing is that although I had sent the piece in as my daughter is a girl, really, and wrote, like, I want to support trans kids, but I also don't want to confuse gender norms with gender identity. And the piece was titled, My Daughter is Not Transgender, She's a Tomboy, by the Times. And for one thing, a lot of people don't look past the headline, right? And it felt offensive to people. It felt to people, whether this was the intention or even whether this was actually written anywhere in the piece, it just felt like some people said it blamed trans people for this narrow view of gender. It felt bad to some people who felt like we're fighting for legitimacy and you're like slicing us off a piece of that, you know, in some way. So what I did was I tried to reach out to some of the critics of the piece and say, can you sit down with me? Can you explain what it is you think I got wrong? And I tried to keep that perspective in mind as I wrote, to see if I could write about this volatile, fraught subject in a way that was honest and deep, but still being very careful with people who are vulnerable and not trying to make them more vulnerable.
Right.
It's so hard to find any kind of common language, right? We don't even agree on what a woman is or a girl is. Mm-hmm. We don't, these huge fights over who gets to claim that term and what, you know, membership in the category requires. And I feel like we might not be able to come to any consensus on what the right thing to do is, but we could learn how other people see the world. I was raised hardcore feminist. Mm-hmm. For instance, when I got armpit hair and my parents were like, you know, women shave their body hair so that they look prepubescent because men are, you know, I mean, you know, that was a whole thing for
like
me.
It sounds like my childhood.
So,
and I'm like, by the way, I have never ever heard that as why we shave. I never heard that before.
I mean, it is weird if you think about it. Like men don't, they can keep their hair, but we have to make it look like we haven't gone through puberty yet. I mean, that's something. That's a little creepy. To think about. So that's my belief system, right? But I recognize that other people have a completely different belief system about gender. How do we move forward? How do we respect each other? How do we have room for each other if we have these competing definitions? I don't actually have the answer to that question, but I want people to be asking that question rather than saying, I am right and you are wrong.
Right. I think you do a really great job of this in your book. And what you learn from reading this book is that gender, the ideas of gender have changed so much through the course of history that where we are right now is completely opposite to what gender roles were in the 1800s or the 1700s.
Yeah.
It's so fluid. It has changed so drastically. And when you look at it on like a timeline and see, oh, well, boys wore lace as baby. Boys wore lace up until they were in
school. Or nobody was wearing pink, like because dye wasn't perfected.
Boys
like,
wore
incredible
pink, too. Yeah. The pink was the boy cut. I learned all of this from reading your book. And that kind of puts things a little bit into perspective. And I do love that you also are very inclusive in this book. You are careful with your language. And you have like interstitials of different people just
stories,
telling their story. And one of them that I'm thinking about was a trans man who called himself a tomboy all growing up because he just didn't know that trans people even existed. But always deep down, he always knew, no, that label's not right for me. There's something inside me that is not the, I'm putting air quotes here, tomboy. And he found that out later. But I just love that you included that story because everybody, like you said, everybody's experience on gender and sexuality, but I'm talking just gender and gender roles is completely different. And I don't know where I'm going with that. I just wanted to say that to you.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the.
She's like, thanks.
Thank you. One of the reasons that I put all those different stories in is to show that most of these people I interviewed, I can't remember how many people, dozens of people between the ages of 8 and 80. And their stories, their kind of origin stories, were really, really similar. But how they identified and who they became were really different. And before there was research on trans kids, there was some research, not a lot because it's hard to do, but there was a little bit of started to be research on what's the connection between childhood tomboyism and lesbianism. And, you know, is there a correlation? Like there's some connection, you know, more lesbians than non-lesbians say they were tomboys, but like, do they grow up to be butch? Do they grow up to be femme? Are there lesbians who weren't tomboys? Are there, you know, it's like, yes, everything. Yes to everything. Whether or not it lines up to gender norms that have gotten increasingly, almost inhumanly strict in the last 30 years. If your child doesn't conform to gender norms, does that mean anything about who they're going to be later? I mean, my argument is the only thing it means is that they're probably going to do better in school, they're probably going to be more creative, and they're probably going to be self-confident because of those wildly divergent stories that I collected, divergent adulthoods, the thing they had in common was self-confidence. And the research on people who don't hew to gender norms shows that they're more creative and do better academically.
So, because they're out of the box. They're just living their lives as how they feel. They're completely out of the box. It's interesting. I wasn't a tomboy, and I'm gay. So that's...
You definitely were a tomboy, Rob. You know, I played football. I played football, like contact football. I was the first girl in upstate New York to do it. And it was like on the news because Title IX had recently been passed. And it was like, it was like a huge deal. And then all of a sudden it was like not cool as I got into high school. I was like, there were so many things that were just really interesting in your book. But one of the things that struck me as a parent and like as it relates to our podcast is when you were talking about getting your kids Kindle Fire and then setting them up to try to get, you know, suggestions, the algorithms of books, and that there was only the choice of boy and girl. Mm-hmm. And you have to choose one. And what's interesting didn't occur to me because while I'm a tomboy, a wife, both of my kids came out for whatever reason. And that's what's also so interesting about your book as really like I have a very girly girl and a very boy. And so like that choice is always like, oh, no, boy. And it serves what he generally wants and what she generally wants. Like she wants unicorns, rainbows, pink and sparkly. And I don't know how that happened. And she did not get that from me or her other mom. So it's just so fascinating that and like how you had to email Amazon to be like, what's, you know, I don't want to choose that.
And what stuck out with me on top of that, too, that chapter in the story, that part in the story is that they're using that to inundate our children with gendered everything. Everything is so gendered now. And it wasn't in the 70s, which is a point you bring up in the book.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that really stuck out to me too, Robin.
Yeah, so I grew up in the 70s and 80s. And like I said, you know, the kids who looked like my kid were pretty common. And there are lots of pictures of me with short hair and a striped turtleneck and corduroys, which my brother is also wearing.
Yeah, bad news bears.
bad news bears, right? So the tomboy was kind of the most popular character in a lot of 70s and 80s media. And it really had to do with feminism trickling into popular culture. But part of the agenda of feminism was to reject the feminine, right? It was like, get your girls away from pink, get your girls away from whatever we marked as feminine, that's bad. And so, for instance, I love this example that this historian named Joe Paoletti found. In the Sears catalogs of the 1970s, they had boys to girls size conversion charts so that girls could shop in the boys section.
Wow.
That's how much they wanted to say, girls, you can have access to what's on the boys side of the line.
This was also on the packets where you make the clothing because that's people are making their own boys, patterns.
Yeah, somewhere I don't know where I put it now, but I had this pattern that says boys and girls shirts, you know, like a McCall's pattern from 1977. Yeah, yeah. But unisex clothes were only ever boys' clothes. So there was no girls to boys size conversion charts. And that is a problem over and over again, I found in this research, that whatever we marked feminine, no matter how arbitrary it is, like pink, there's nothing about pink that is inherently for girls, but whatever it is that we mark as feminine, kids are taught to look down on it.
And
and that happens. The only time there's a correction for that is in the girl power kind of 1990s when the Spice Girls come along and you get Xena and Buffy and you get these feminine, strong but feminine women, but then it returns the emphasis to you have to be beautiful. You can kick butt, but you better look.
As long as you're hot.
As long as you're hot.
But that's general TV. I mean, could there be one more sitcom with a beautiful wife and a fat, funny husband? That's the representation we see.
That's what we see. And you even showed pictures of two different magazines, like Girls World and Boys World. I don't remember what the magazines were.
Yeah.
But on the Girls magazine, there's a picture of a pretty blonde girl, like she just woke up looking pretty. And she is front and foremost.
Like you do.
And then there's like some background stories like on the sides of her big face. And then the Boys magazine of the same year is just a bunch of like words and pictures of stuff. No beauty, just like it basically saying like, what do you want to do? Who do you want to be? You could be a fireman. You could be this. Yeah. And it's a completely different message than what the girls get in our magazines.
You could be pretty.
You can be
basically
pretty.
That's what it says.
Or go
Here's
away.
Here's how. And it, yeah, those yeah, magazines yeah. are Girls Life and Boys Life. It's from 2016.
Yeah.
Well, that's a big point you bring up. Like, why are we all of a sudden back in these crazy, crazy gendered roles when even still we're having this huge gender revolution and we're talking about pronouns and we're trying to educate ourselves and be inclusive? Like, it's even more gendered for our children than it was in the 70s, than it was in the 20s.
You know, what happened after that tomboy heyday of the 70s was the feminist backlash that's been chronicled by Susan Faludi, and it makes its way into childhood. It coupled with the rise of prenatal mm-hmm. sex testing, which allows you to know the sex of your child before birth, and a recession that makes marketers need to stop people from being able to hand me down clothes. So if you start communicating, you absolutely cannot share pink. A boy can never be put in pink. Then people have to, you can't just keep your pink stroller or your
two sets of clothes.
You have to buy twice as much. Yeah. And I think it proved so wildly successful that reinforcing people's gender biases turned out to be an incredibly easy way to make a ton of money. But I think to the point of the Kindle Fire, it is so much scarier in this mm-hmm. world of technology where we all live in our little silos and our realities get reinforced. And so that now people truly believe that these are biological differences and they believe that gender is not a construct and that this is how boys and girls are, instead of understanding how boys and girls and other kids learn about gender and why it's important for them to master the stereotypes. And my argument is let's roll back the stereotypes. Let's make more, what we made this pink-blue divide. It sold a lot of products, but it confused a lot of children about what is normal for them. And it cut them off because we arbitrarily have put, or maybe not arbitrarily, maybe we've put things on each side for very specific reasons for social control, but all of mm-hmm. the discussions about toxic masculinity, about girls' low self-esteem or needing to get ahead in STEM fields, all of that is connected to the stereotypes that they absorb by the time they're 3 years old and are literally woven into the fabric of their clothes that are processed in the manufacturing of their toys. Their gendered worlds are constructed very early and very precisely.
Jamie and I had talked about this tomboy thing. We're like, tomboy doesn't exist anymore. And what I think is interesting, and I'm not sure how I feel about it, is that for me, being a tomboy wasn't in any way about sexuality and it wasn't about gender. It was literally just, I loved football and I loved hanging out with the boys and I loved kickball. And I didn't want to, the girls just were sitting out in groups and they were singing AC/DC and wearing hot pants. And I was just I don't get that. I like football jerseys. And now it feels like that in a way has been lost. And now it's all over here and gender and sexuality are mixed. And I think that could be in part why people are asking about your daughter. And I don't know. I'm not sure. I think that's a good thing that it's been all collapsed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think this issue of who gets limited and who gets liberated comes up over and over again. So the word tomboy was liberating for a lot of people for a long time because you could take that label with you and then people would stop expecting you to be a typical girl. Oh, she's a tomboy. I get it, right? And that would evaporate, as it sounds like it happened for you around puberty, where you...
I mean, not really. I'm still wearing a giant T-shirt.
Yeah. But I mean, you said you
I remember my sixth grade teacher pulling me aside and telling me that the boys were going to start to change and not want to hang out with me and all the girls, and that I should try to get in with the girls now. And she offered me, and by the way, very well-meaning, she still comments on my Facebook page, lovely lady, but offered me $1 any day I would wear a dress. And that's a lot of cash back in 81. And I was like, and I said
it?
No.
Yeah.
I said no, because I was like, I don't like dresses.
Yeah.
I don't like them. And I still don't.
Yeah.
But anyway,
pretty common. I mean, there were, I didn't find that many tomboys who grew up to wear dresses. And in fact, that was one of the interesting things is that they talked about, I learned, because I wasn't socialized as a typical girl, I learned that I didn't have to lead with prettiness or sexiness. I could lead with my intellect. I could lead with my physical prowess. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to my earlier point, right? When people write to me and say, my child is gender nonconforming, I'm scared. I say, you have been given a gift. You don't have to spend all of your time fighting against the pressures of gender. What should you do if your child is gender nonconforming? Celebrate. Like, great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think your story, Robin, is like, you know, it's one of those stories about that you had a certain kind of freedom. And kids who are...
No, I literally was like, I could do whatever I want to. Like, the reason I signed up for football was because the teacher, they handed out the permission slips only to boys. And I was like, that's outrageous. I was like, give me one of those. And I didn't even really like football. I was like... I was like, I'm playing. And the lady, you could just see the look on her face. Even like my 10-year-old self knew as I turned in the piece of paper that she was like, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And it was a problem. They had to figure out where I was going to change. Like, they had to open up the girls' locker room just for me. You know, they had to do all these things because they had to provide, there was no separate but equal, so that it had to exist for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Meanwhile, I wanted to play soccer when I was 5 and they wouldn't let me and I didn't fight it. So, you know, there
and,
you go.
You know, and many, many more girls play sports today than they did, you know, especially in, say, the 60s, right? Before, and the early 70s, before
Right, yeah.
But they quit.
I should clarify. You know, I want to play on my brother's team. They wouldn't let me play on my brother's team. They said I had to play on a girl's team. So I just gave up and said, no, I don't want to, you know, that's not what I want to do. But I didn't fight the fight like you, Robin.
But, you know, Robin's story is important. Both of stories are important because they show that the only kids who have historically had access to both sides of this pink-blue divide are the ones who are barreling across it. And what I want is for all children to have what's on both sides of it, because there's really good stuff on both sides that's mistakenly labeled as girl stuff and boy stuff, from activities like certain sports to, you know, personality traits, like our ideas that girls are gentle and sweet and kind and boys are aggressive and that they don't have lots of different emotions, right? They learn that really young, and there may be ways that there are boys are more commonly and girls are more commonly, but we really don't know who children would be if all that stuff wasn't marked as masculine and feminine. We don't know how they'd experiment or find themselves or find their strengths if they weren't being told that there's this narrow range of normal that they have to operate inside.
Yeah.
And the problem is it's even harder nowadays to get away from that because it's the advertising. You know, you can do anything. You can do all you can do at home to disabuse your children of any gender norms, which I think most of our listeners probably do, because a lot of us, our genders are a little bit out of the box. We're still inundated with everything in the outside world, and that's not going to change unless advertisers can change the whole gender thing. I want to talk about Legos, Lisa, the whole Lego thing.
Because that was really
fascinating.
That
was eye-opening to me, too.
Yeah, there's a great image from 1981. It's a really famous image of this girl in overalls, and I think she's wearing a striped shirt, holding up this Lego creation. And it says, what it is beautiful. And this was an ad campaign that was created by one of the very few female creative directors in advertising. And she had to convince the Lego executives to put girls in these ads. She said, girls play Legos. And the campaign was very successful. And this image, this tomboy kind of image, has stayed in a lot of people's minds. And flash forward to 2012, Lego introduces the Lego Friends set for girls.
Eye-opening. Yeah.
And Lego Friends has like little kind of plastic Bratz dolls looking things. And you put them together, but not much. So they're not really construction toys. They're more like dolls and dollhouses.
Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with dolls and dollhouses because they build certain skills like nurturing and communication skills, right? But Legos, the traditional ones, the boy Legos now, they build spatial relations skills and problem solving skills. And they build all these things that will, you know, lead you to your well-paid engineering job someday. And this has been very, once again, very successful financially, right? But these toys build different skill sets and mm-hmm. contribute mm-hmm. to this mm-hmm. narrowing range of normal. And if you look back 30 years before, you know, kids were just playing with Legos and Legos were just Legos.
And building their own creations
yeah. and they were ungendered. And one of the things that's fascinating about the ad campaign, there are lots of different kids. They did a whole bunch of versions. And when they cast them, they just told the kids to show up in what they were wearing. So it's not that they told this girl to dress like a tomboy. It's that yeah. that's how kids were dressing. And that yeah. woman grew up to be a doctor and talked about, I feel like playing with Legos was part of sort of building my science brain that led to my career. So what happens when the toys we give our children and that they've been socialized to believe are just for them, what happens when it sort of diverts their career paths, when it helps them develop skills that you know they need for life? And why can't we have toys that help us develop nurturing and communication skills and spatial relations and problem solving skills? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't we yeah. want our children to have both those skill sets?
Yeah.
This is fascinating, and it's also infuriating to me. Like, my yeah. daughter has the Friends Legos and I hate them. And I'm always like, wah. Because you get them once, you put the thing together, they play in the dollhouse, and then they're forgotten about. And they never build anything with those ever again, because the purpose of those was just to build that particular dollhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that happened with some of the boys' Legos too, though. I mean, they're all about like, this is now the Harry Potter set. And it's like, once you lose the directions, it's like all you have is all these pieces that, and my kids like had collapsed all the sets they had. And I was like, let's have Lego contests. And they were like, most of these aren't building blocks. They're actually just stuff that work for Harry Potter. And it's not even conducive to actually, I find most play isn't conducive to kids just thinking it's serving them something.
We're dumbing down our kids.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's a kind of planned obsolescence in the Lego.
Yes.
So like you made that Lego kit and now you have to buy another Lego kit.
Now you have to buy another
one. I don't think they want you to reuse them over and over again.
They sure don't. Because then you don't buy more.
Then you don't buy more.
But you are sort of transitioning a little bit. You have a chapter that's about parenting across the pink and blue divide. I think that's not the title of the chapter, but I got in the ballpark, which I'm pretty darn proud of.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Oh, parenting between the pink and blue. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that chapter looks at the research on what's the connection between how we parent and how our children can access both sides of that divide. Because as you mentioned, like Robin, your kids are like really staying within their gendered sections, even though you and your wife didn't encourage that.
In fact, I try to discourage it and it doesn't matter.
Right. And that's because the information they got from the culture and from their peers that they got very early really was more powerful than anything else. However, there are things that we can do. And people have been asking me a lot about that. And I always say, there's stuff we can do in our family, there's stuff we can do in our school, and then there are demands we can make on our culture. And what the research showed was, and none of it's particularly surprising, but you know, if you have a mom who doesn't cling to gender norms herself, you'll be slightly more likely to have a tomboyish kid. Mm-hmm. If it's a heterosexual family, or if there's a dad involved, if he plays unconventionally with the children, that is, if he takes the daughters fishing and out to play football, that the daughters, that will be incorporated into the daughter's range of normal, that we can widen that range to a certain extent in our families. But what's important to me, you know, I also kind of hated the Lego Friends and it made me cringe. But because I saw how much was devalued just by being marked as feminine, mm-hmm. and because I mm-hmm. saw that stuff I really liked was devalued, like I am very into rainbows myself and I love stars and I love sparkles and I love a lot of, not all shades of pink, but I love a lot of different shades of pink. I did not want to participate in saying that stuff was bad because it was feminine. I did not ever want to use girly as an insult. And as hard as it was for me to watch my younger daughter cling to stuff that I was kind of like, is this, you know, I don't want you to be obsessed with your appearance. Everyone thinks it's weird that you're like 6 years old and you're into makeup, and I'm worried what people think. But if you were a boy, I would probably think it was awesome and cool. Right. So yeah. I don't want to make decisions based on sex or gender for my children. So if I would let a boy do it, then I will let a girl do it. If I let one of my daughters go around with short hair and super baggy clothes, and the other one wants to wear like sparkly bicycle shorts and a tiara, you know, I am all for it. So that's how it happened for me. And that's what I encourage, is don't think about how you want a boy or a girl to be, but a person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt about the dresses, because my daughter was like, by 2 years old, she wanted to be in a princess dress every day. We created this thing called the base outfit, because otherwise she wouldn't. We were like, oh, every princess wears a base outfit, and then you put the dress on top of it. Yeah. Because we were like, you can't wear it 24/7. We're like, you have to have some clothes on, like these, like, you know, like you just at least have to have some tights and a t-shirt on, like whatever you want to do. And so many people, I got a lot of people who would, they wouldn't say they were judging me, but they would be like, oh, you know, we don't do princess dresses. And I was just like, but she loves it. And I've said to a couple of people, you know, that would be the equivalent of if my mom had said to me, girls don't do football jerseys.
Yeah.
It's like, but I loved it. So right. It's like, I'm not going to take, I don't know where she got it, and, you know, but I'm not going to take it away because it's here. You know, that's where I came from on it. It's a hard thing to know what the right thing to do is, but I wasn't going to, you know, take anything away.
And it's important to know, too, that there is very interesting research that's in the book about girls going through the princess phase and then getting out of it. So most girls, something like 74% of girls, of American girls, go through this thing, this phase where they only want to wear princess fair, usually between ages 3 and 6. It can start a little earlier, it can last a little longer, but just generally. And it has to do with their cognitive development and how they understand gender. So because they don't know the difference between sex and gender stereotypes, and they've learned that they're a girl or a boy, they're trying to master being a girl or a boy. So when you're like looking in horror at, oh my God, she's only 3 years old and she's doing all of this like extra girly, stereotypically female stuff, and I'm not like that, and I didn't encourage it and I didn't buy it for her, but it's all she wants. It's because the child has absorbed that is how you explain your membership, work for your membership in the group. And they police other kids who don't do it right. And that starts to wane sometime around age 6, where you start hearing girls announce that they actually hate pink. They don't, many of them don't want to wear dresses anymore. And a lot of parents are really excited about that. And they think like, whew, that princess phase is over. That was tough to tolerate, except for the ones who love it and think it's great, right? But it turns out that is also about cognitive development. And now they understand, first of all, that their membership in the group is actually about their bodies. That's why we told them they were girls, not because of what they were wearing. Mm. Wearing a dress doesn't make you a girl or not a girl. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that happens is they start to understand gender hierarchies. So they understand that actually all that stuff that they loved and that they tried to perfect to maintain their membership in that group is actually looked down upon in society. So when they turn 6 or 7 and start saying, I hate pink, and you think, great, what they're saying is, I've realized that women have less status and that stuff that's culturally marked as feminine is less valuable, and I'm distancing myself from it. And I read this research exactly as my daughter turned 7 and all of her friends started announcing they hated pink, they hated princesses, they didn't want to wear dresses, and they all did it to show that they were better than a typical girl. And then I once again just said, forget it. We're not doing it. We don't reject stuff because it's for girls, because we're girls and we're feminists, and because gender is not a good criterion for liking or not liking something.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it, you know, as much as I agree with you that gender is kind of a learned
construct.
Yeah, a learned construct. Where do our trans brothers and sisters fall on the spectrum. Like those trans men who say, no, I have always been a boy deep down inside, and I always wanted to dress and look and feel like a boy, or and vice versa with the girls. Where does that fall then? If this is all a social construct, where does that come from?
Well, often when I'm talking about this stuff, people will think that it's just an LGBTQ kids issue. And my kid is a rainbow kid of some kind, but it is an issue for all children, the way that we gender their psychic and material worlds. Mm-hmm. Trans girls will follow a fairly, sometimes, I mean, there are people who come out of trans at 86, and there are people who come out of 3, and there are people who come out of 15. So, but there is some recent research that shows that trans girls will, like, when kids are dividing at 3, even though they're dividing based on stereotypes, that they'll follow that same trajectory. And when, so that kids may be dividing by gender, not just by sex. Mm-hmm. And they usually won't go through the princess to tomboy phase between 6 and 8, because they can't prove their membership in the group by their bodies. So they still need, like, no, I'm really a girl, I have the long hair. And they're still doing that even when some other girls are not. But the relaxing of gender norms, the stopping of saying that boys are this way and girls are this way, and saying that colors and toys and skill sets are related to sex, is something that is just as healthy for trans kids as it is for cis kids. So changing this part of our society is good for everyone, and it doesn't have to be threatening to kids who have a sense of their own gender identity not matching up with their sex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I never understand that people are threatened. It's like, you look at all the, like, you know, J.K. Rowling is obviously in the middle of all this controversy right now. Mm. And I don't want to get too much into that, but, like, I read one, I like to read in the comments just so I can see what both sides of the aisle are saying.
The comments are the worst.
They're the worst. I mean, Twitter's a cesspool. But this one woman said, went into this tirade about how her femininity was being stolen or watered down by this larger view. And I was just like, I just never understand.
It's like not a
saying that this person identifies as a woman doesn't negate or delete or in any way reduce your femininity. So why do you care? And I'll never understand that thinking.
Well, I think there's so much confusion over what's biological, what's constructed, what's social, you know, who gets to mm-hmm. claim what words, what do these words mean? People have wildly different ideas of what the word gender means. And it's my contention that this really fuels these culture wars. And the truth is that when I say that this stuff is constructed, what I'm talking about is the marketing of gender to children, right? Of being told, of having to select a gender on your Kindle Fire, and then having your whole entire electronic universe pinpointed into, like, one kind of human being, right? I'm so talking crazy about that. But there are, you know, masculine girls and feminine boys, and there are feminine girls and masculine boys, and they may be like that forever, and they may be policed out of it. And maybe they were 100% born like that. And maybe they had some inclinations that were supported and facilitated. And then they got into a culture that was reinforced as they went along. So it is not really useful, I don't think, to try to figure out exactly what's biological and exactly what's cultural, because those things always inform each other. All children are socialized and get gendered messages. So we don't have a way of knowing. The only way we'd know is if we really, really stopped saying there was girl stuff and boy stuff and girl personality traits and boy personality traits. And I'm not even talking about bodies. I always say to my kids, this is your sex. This is your body. It was born with these parts. And it is no indication of who you are going to be. It's not an indication of what kind of person you're going to be attracted to, what job you're going to have. And it's not an indication of how you're going to identify. It's just your body. And right. I do desperately hope that both my children love their bodies. That would be great, you know?
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
It's a hard road though.
That's hard for everybody.
It's hard but for you everybody.
Know, I think the bottom line is no two snowflakes are the same, right? We are all, we're a veritable rainbow, to use a gay term.
Yeah.
But like, you know, so take people for what they say they are and just go with that, you know?
Yeah. And let them be what they want to be and just create a space for them to explore what they want.
Yeah. Well, then we get into this issue, right, where we don't have common language. So we have people who say,
yes,
boy or girl is a social category and anyone can opt into it by how they identify. And then we have people say, well, that's a physical category and that's separate from identity. And then we just have people going around, whoops, in circles. Each person is invested in different words, meaning different things. And I find, you know, gender is very interesting because to some people, the word gender is a synonym with sex. It's often used that way out in the world. Mm-hmm. For some people, gender means all of the societal norms, expectations, and stereotypes that are affixed to us to oppress us. And for some people, it means identity and it's biological and, you know, it's not about norms. And how do we make peace and support each other and move forward when we can't even agree on what that very basic but very important word means?
Well, making peace and moving forward in agreement is like something that I feel like our country and our world is tackling at an epic level. That's coming on every front. So I don't know that I know the answer to that.
But
I don't think anyone's coming here for Jamie and I to give the answers anyway. Let's be fully honest.
I think reading your book is a good start to just get your own juices flowing, just to delve deep into this whole.
It's so layered and nuanced.
It really is. And it's been mind blowing just reading what I read.
And just so you know, Lisa, for the next 2 weeks, Jamie's going to be like pulling out your book and going, and another thing.
I am.
And I'd be like, I know, Jamie, I read it too. I know.
I am.
But she will be quoting you for at least the next 5 episodes. But
it's got me thinking. Yeah. And I thought of myself as a very forward thinking. Like I'm trying to raise kids who just don't follow the gender norms. And I have to check myself because my daughter checks me because she'll hear me say, well, that's a boy's shirt. Mom, there's no boy shirts, because I've been raising her to like dispel all these myths. And even I'm screwing up left and right. I forget. Because it's so ingrained in us. So this is really, that's really got me thinking a lot, and I appreciate it.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that, because I feel like my goal was to get people to question where their idea of normal came from. Mm.
Well, everyone needs to read this book. At least everybody listens to our podcast, and then everybody else on Oprah's book list and beyond. It's called Tomboy, The Surprising History and Future of Girls Who Dare to Be Different. Lisa Celan Davis. Did I say that right? Is it Celan?
Yes, close. You know, I'm not that picky anyway.
Jamie and I screw up every name that we come across. So
that. Everybody screws my name up too. So there's that. So
listen for it. They really do. They really do screw her name up all the time.
You know, you're a literary person that you notice that there are a lot of I's in my name. Thank you for noticing. Nobody spells it right ever. That's the thing.
I'm going to try.
Where can people follow you or find the book? Can you give them all of your business?
Oh, yes, my business. Well, I would love them to buy Tomboy at their local bookstores and ask their local bookstores to carry it.
Yes.
And they can follow me on Instagram at Lisa Celan Davis, or Twitter, where I'm still trying to figure out how to be a human on Twitter, at Lisa Celan Davis.
Not easy.
And I'm on Facebook too. I try to write little interesting profiles of tomboys and dissections of the words and ideas associated with tomboys on Instagram. So that might be the most.
I saw that on Instagram. It was pretty cool.
Thank you. That's fun.
And it's Celan, is spelled Celin.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you both of you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Lisa Celan Davis.
What a complicated topic.
It really is. She does her research, huh?
I know. But I could have talked to her for like 10 more hours about all the nuances of it. It just was so interesting.
Just talking about gender is always such a deep conversation.
And the history of it, like what we've made up and what it's become, is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like what we forced, the boxes we forced people into. And then we act like it's been there forever.
I know. And it hasn't.
And it hasn't.
At all.
Yeah. I love that tomboys are more creative and they do better academically.
I mean, that's kick ass. Yeah. I don't know if that's
Mad because you weren't a tomboy?
No, but I just didn't want to say the blanket statement that they're better. But
well, Jamie. I'm just kidding.
I don't know. Whatever.
No, it was cool though. That was a cool interview.
It was. She's awesome. We hope you enjoyed it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you miss us, you can always check us out everywhere on the social. You can also buy our book. It's out.
Yep.
It's If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making an LGBTQ Family. It's available at all major retailers. You can get Kindle, print, hardcover, and the audiobook is coming soon, if it's not already
out. Very soon. As soon as the man approves it.
Yeah. And then be sure to review us on Amazon or Goodreads or wherever else you find reviews. Just review.
Yes. Those are so helpful to us. So thank you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and let's keep the conversation going. You can join us on social, Ovaries Talk on Twitter and Instagram. If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook. And we've got a little community in there where you can talk to other listeners, and it's a great group. You could support the podcast and join our community on Patreon, patreon.com/ovariestalk. And don't forget, you're going to get bonus content there, like videos of the interviews that are not edited, which is pretty wonderful. You could see Jamie and I sweaty as we interview.
As my mom, Mama Sue, says, it really makes a difference to be able to see the faces of the people talking.
I mean, what your mom is really saying is, somebody give us a TV show. You can also, speaking of TV, you can subscribe to us on YouTube, and you're going to see recordings of our live streams there. So, and those live streams are every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So come find us.
You can always drop in and catch us live and ask us questions in the chat, and we'll try to answer them as best we can. Or you can just make fun of us in the chat, which a lot of people do too.
Yes. And thank you to our sponsor, Ember Wave, and all of you patrons for helping us make this show possible. We thank you.
We thank you so much, and have a wonderful, wonderful week. And we'll see you next week, or we'll talk to you
okay,
next
week. Jamie.
We'll be in your ears next week. How's that? We'll be back.
You okay? It's like Helen took over your body. All right. Eggs.
Ovaries.
Out.
Helen, we're doing it.
We did it, Helen.
Okay,
just
Helen.
Shut up. If these ovaries could talk, they would say,
ovaries out. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.